the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. Power grab in the U.S. Senate.
Blowing up the legislative filibuster.
That is the big story at noon. Democrats pushing to kill the filibuster. President Biden says he supports changing the rules of the Senate to allow for passage of legislation on a simple majority vote. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says this will fundamentally change government forever.
Nobody serving in this chamber can even begin to imagine what a completely scorched earth Senate would look like.
South Dakota Senator John
Thune to accomplish some short-term agenda will only backfire and create a lot of long-term pain for the country and for the party that does it.
Thune says if the Senate votes to get rid of the filibuster, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party will see all of its legislative dreams come true. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton.
That's ultimately what the Democrats want. It's their far left that's angry that they don't have popular support for their agenda, so they're trying to change the rules and ram it through in this fleeting window when they have power before we win back the Senate and the House next year.
Cotton says President Biden has been hijacked and pushed around by the far left ever since he took the oath of office. Former President Trump blasting the Biden administration for creating a crisis at the southern border.
They're destroying our country. People are coming in by the hundreds of thousands. They were stopping them so they wouldn't come through Mexico, and we had it really down to a good system, and all of that is now eroded.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas testifying before Congress today about the surge of migrants at the southern border, and President Biden telling illegals to stay away.
I can say quite clearly, don't come. And what we're in the process of getting set up, don't leave your town or city or community.
The president being pressured to visit the border himself, something he has yet to do. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy just returned from the border, where he described the situation as heart-wrenching.
A one-year-old, a three-year-old, and a five-year-old holding hands. No one in sight for miles, walking by themselves. Why are the children doing this? Why are the parents putting them through this? Because President Biden told them to come and they'll make them citizens.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott says National Guard troops could stay on the southern border through September as officials brace for a record number of illegal crossings this year. Mark Lamb is the sheriff in Pinal County, Arizona.
Oh yeah, this is as bad as it's been. I mean, this is worse than what it was under the Obama days, and it was like the Wild West out there in the desert on the south end of our county, and we're back to that again.
The Department of Homeland Security says it expects illegal border crossings to hit a 20-year high this year. Texas Congressman Dan Crenshaw.
There's a real crisis on the border. The Biden administration won't admit it, and they created it by executive orders rescinding Trump's policies that were actually working.
The Dallas Convention Center could soon house the influx of migrant kids who are crossing the southern border at record levels. Massage parlor massacre.
We just heard numerous gunshots coming from across the street.
Eight people dead after a string of shootings at three massage parlors in the Atlanta area last night. Six of the victims were Asians. Police Chief Rodney Bryant says it's too soon to call it a hate crime.
We are still early in this investigation, so we cannot make that determination at this moment.
Police arresting the suspect, 21-year-old Robert Aaron Long, 150 miles south of Atlanta last night. Authorities believe he was headed to Florida to carry out more attacks. President Biden weighing in on the sexual harassment claims against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
If the investigation confirms the claims of the women, should he resign?
Yes, I think he'd probably end up being prosecuted, too.
The president telling ABC News last night that all of Governor Cuomo's seven female accusers deserve to be heard. Radio talk show host Tammy Bruce.
You can't even blame political opponents here, because these are Democrats. These are women who supposedly support his agenda. I think that he fully expected to be defended and protected. And I think right now he probably just doesn't quite know what to do. But he's going to not have a choice very, very soon.
Governor Cuomo also under investigation for alleged allegedly covering up the number of COVID-19 nursing home deaths in New York. In California, a governor recall underway. Organizers say they have far more signatures than the 1.5 million required to remove Governor Gavin Newsom from office.
We shouldn't have apathy. We should have faith, and we need to keep fighting the fight because California deserves so much better.
Officials say the recall election to replace Governor Newsom will likely take place towards the end of the year. The Democrat admits the effort will be up to the voters.
Well, the reality is, looks like it's going on the ballot.
Governor Newsom under fire for the way he's handled the pandemic. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis plans to use federal COVID relief funds to help first responders in the Sunshine State.
Proposing a one-time $1,000 bonus payment to all first responders, fire, sworn law enforcement, EMTs, which totals about $208.4 million.
Critics say the federal COVID funds have less to do with the pandemic and more to do with bailing out blue states. The Buffalo Sabres have parted ways with head coach Ralph Krueger, the team dead last in the NHL. In fact, the Sabres haven't won a game since February 23rd. They've been shut out six times this season. Ralph Krueger out in Buffalo. Still to come this Wednesday, horrific murder in Rochester, getting rid of police in Ithaca, and disappearing farmland in Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. All is quiet on the weather scene on this St. Patrick's Day afternoon locally. Big storms raging in the southeast. Our weather story turns toward rain and some snow tomorrow. I'll have those forecast details coming up in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin Williams checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Wednesday, March 17th, New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik says Democrats are dragging their feet when it comes to impeaching Governor Cuomo.
They are slow walking this. The nursing home scandals, that is an impeachable offense. And the sexual harassment and sexual abuse scandals are also an impeachable offense.
Stefanik says Governor Cuomo has abused his position of power for long enough, and Democrats who've called for his removal need to follow up their words with action.
Whether it's 15,000 seniors who have lost their lives, or whether it's women who worked for his administration who were victimized and abused. Democrats in Albany are saying they support his resignation. They need to move forward as quickly as possible. These victims have come forward. Families who've lost loved ones in nursing homes have come forward.
Congresswoman Stefanik says Governor Cuomo has no shame and he'll stay in office until lawmakers decide they're going to remove him from office. New York State's budget process this year, unusual to say the least. The same lawmakers who've called for Governor Cuomo to step down now have to work with him to get a deal done before the April 1st deadline. State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins.
The majority of my members have come out and suggested that the governor should resign.
Herself included, but Stewart-Cousins says they still need to come together on a vital spending plan for the state.
Really, the most important job is to really set the fiscal climate for building back after this COVID pandemic. So we'll do whatever we have to do.
The lawmakers have proposed a tax on the wealthy in this year's budget and a plan to legalize recreational marijuana. Police in Rochester, New York call it one of the most disturbing murders they've ever witnessed. A man intentionally set on fire and two teenagers accused of doing it.
I have seen a lot. There's a few cases that stick out. Seen the pictures of this guy. This is one that I'll remember.
Rochester Police Captain Frank Umbino says the pure evil involved with this murder, hard to put into words.
Well, I don't think anybody's prepared to say why this happened.
The victim has been identified as 53-year-old Stephen Ammenhauser. Police say 16-year-old Xavier Perry and 14-year-old Adriel Riley poured flammable liquid on Ammenhauser as he was sitting in a chair in his apartment, then lit him on fire. Ammenhauser passed away from his injuries yesterday. The mayor of Ithaca, New York, wants to do away with the city's police department. Svante Myrick has proposed replacing the 63-officer department in Ithaca with a civilian-led Community Solutions and Public Safety Department.
Well, it's pretty sad, really, when you think about it.
Harlan McEwen is the former police chief in Ithaca.
We depend on our police to solve all the problems of society, when in fact we should have other services supporting them in this effort. Doing away with the police would be a really dangerous, what I call, social experiment.
Under the mayor's proposal, streets in Ithaca would be patrolled by armed public safety workers and unarmed community solution workers. The controversial plan still needs approval from city and county lawmakers. The Pennsylvania Department of Health says vaccine distribution will accelerate in the coming weeks.
Some of those appointments might go past March, but getting those appointments is scheduled just so that we can, again, be working with providers to ensure that those folks are getting in the door.
Lindsay Malden with the Department of Health says the state also ramping up efforts to get teachers in the Keystone State vaccinated by the end of the month.
What we do know is that they're increasing slightly week over week, and so by the end of the month, we anticipate a significant boost in the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
Health officials say they hope by late April or early May to be able to vaccinate every single adult in the Commonwealth. The push to bring back students full-time in New York could hinge on bringing them closer together. A new study says cutting the distance from 6 feet down to 3 is just as safe if everyone is masked up.
You have to go 3 feet because a lot of the schools don't have the space in their classrooms to work all the kids back in with the 6 feet ruling.
Amy Leach with the group Western New York Students First says cutting the distance in half will allow schools to bring students back 5 days a week. Erie County Health Commissioner Dr. Gail Bernstein says that call is up to the state.
Local health departments in New York State are not allowed to develop policies for the schools. Those policies are developed by the New York State Education Department and the New York State Health Department.
A lot of parents say the hybrid learning model just isn't cutting it anymore, and it's time to get kids back in the classroom 5 days a week. The amount of farmland in Pennsylvania has fallen in recent years, while populations in those rural areas on the rise. Here's Family Life's Terry Diener.
A recent report from Penn State's College of Agricultural Sciences analyzed data from the 2017 Census of Agriculture. The authors concluded the state's total farmland acreage declined by 6%. The trends could lead to less food produced in PA and limited open land for environmental protection. About a quarter of the total land area is used for agriculture. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. Let's pause for sports. It's your two-minute drill.
Yeah, let's start on the ice, and it was a battle of 11-game losing streaks. The Sabres and New Jersey, who had lost 11 straight at home, but they knocked off Buffalo last night 3-2. After the game, Sabres head coach Ralph Krueger.
We need to sense that that need to get a lead and the value of that again, which we've definitely lost here of late.
With that losing streak hitting 12 games, the Sabres fired Krueger today. Buffalo's winless streak matches the third worst in team history and the longest since Buffalo lost a team record 14 straight midway through the 2014-15 season. The 61-year-old Krueger was in his second season with Buffalo. In Pittsburgh, Trent Frederick scored the go-ahead goal. The Bruins beat the Penguins 2-1, snapping the Pens' six-game winning streak. Sid Crosby.
Pretty tight and intense hockey game, and back-to-back games like that. Our effort was good. We just didn't get enough done.
The Islanders had their 9-game winning streak snapped after Alex Ovechkin scored his 718th career goal to pass Phil Esposito and become the second active player to record 1,300 points. Here's Ovi.
Obviously, it's history. It's pretty big numbers, and happy to be in that category, but just move forward.
With the win, the Capitals move into first place in the East. In the NBA, the 76ers outscored the Knicks 26-14 in the fourth quarter to rally for a 99-96 win in Philadelphia. In college basketball, the NIT begins tonight in Texas. Only 16 teams vying for the championship. One possible wrinkle with this year's tourney is that three of the four number one seeds, Colorado State, Mississippi, and St. Louis, are alternates for the NCAA tournament, could make the field if one of those teams have to drop out due to COVID. The deadline, 6 o'clock next Tuesday. Buffalo's scheduled to take on Colorado State Friday night. The Bulls won 7 straight games before losing to Ohio in the MAC title game. 4 Atlantic 10 teams make up the rest of the NIT field. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiette.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Wednesday edition of the Noon Report, massage parlor massacre. Biden sounds off on Cuomo and the push to kill the filibuster.
COVID hasn't caused the discrimination against those with disability, but it has revealed our cultural bias against them. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. During the pandemic, the world learned that some British doctors placed do not resuscitate orders on COVID-19 patients who had intellectual disabilities. These orders reflect a tendency across Western culture to commodify human life, valuing people based on extrinsic abilities and appearances, instead of assuming inherent value for everyone who's part of the human family. Thus, the disabled are often not deemed as valuable in our world as the non-disabled are. For example, a recent story at NBC News reported that denying organ transplants to people with Down syndrome and autism, quote, is common in the United States, even though it's illegal under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Now, one reason given to defend this kind of discrimination is that someone with Down syndrome, for example, may not be able to comply with post-transplant requirements, such as taking immunosuppressive drugs. But that reason doesn't even pass the laugh test. The intellectually disabled are usually, as several of my colleagues can attest, perfectly capable of taking their meds on schedule without assistance. And those who aren't have guardians and caretakers who ensure they comply. Another reason for leaving individuals with disability off of transplant list is far more sinister. These patients are, some clinics claim, quote, more likely to have co-occurring conditions that would make a transplant dangerous, and the patient's quality of life would be unlikely to improve with a transplant. Now, on one hand, as a report from the National Council on Disabilities found, these worries are completely unfounded. Though some disabled people do have co-occurring conditions that make transplant surgery dangerous, most do not. The real story behind this discrimination, in fact, can be summed up in this phrase, quote, a patient's quality of life, a phrase that's been used throughout history and especially recently to promote various forms of eugenics. After all, providing people with less worthy lives with a transplant is to waste a perfectly good organ that could go to someone more valuable. So shouldn't the organs go to the quote unquote best of us? Now, of course, no one would put it like this. To do so would expose the lethal logic at work behind leaving people with intellectual disability off the list. Instead, what we hear are things about disabled people not benefiting from a transplanted organ like others would, which is completely absurd. A new heart beats and circulates blood. That's the benefit. This is true regardless of the person's intellectual capacity. Now, today, 16 states ban this kind of discrimination. Similar measures are pending in 8 other states and in Congress. Even so, these laws face an uphill battle culturally, even if they're passed. As the head of the National Council on Disability admitted, the real goal of these laws is to, quote, inspire a change of heart so people understand that they're discriminating. So, even as we support these legal efforts to prevent this kind of discrimination, we have to remember the only protection, the best protection for people with disabilities is to recover the idea of the Imago Dei. When people cease seeing themselves and others as image bearers, they see themselves and others as merely means and not ends, as units of utility to us and to society. That's why we've chosen Imago Dei, the image of God, as the theme for this year's Wilberforce Weekend. For 3 days, May 21st through the 23rd in Dallas, Fort Worth, we will explore how to understand the image of God and how to apply this understanding to our cultural moment as a central part of our cultural witness. I hope you can join us. Come to WilberforceWeekend.org, WilberforceWeekend.org, to learn more and to register. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
A lot of green going on today. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. Let's head outside. Here's meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. This St. Patrick's Day afternoon is a quiet one locally and regionally. Most of the action nationally will be in the deep south, where severe storms and tornadoes are occurring. Our weather will be impacted by that system to the extent we see rain tomorrow, rain that flips to snow later in the day and at night as cold air is drawn in out of Ontario. The call for this afternoon, where the overcast has not yet broken, it will. It'll turn out partly sunny, milder than yesterday, the high in the mid-40s to the mid-50s. Clouds return tonight, the low in the 30s. Cloudy and chilly tomorrow with rain arriving. It'll turn increasingly windy and colder. That rain flips to some sleet and snow from north to south later in the day into the night. Some accumulations, especially the high ground of the southern Finger Lakes and Twin Tiers. The high tomorrow in the 40s. Clearing on Friday, brisk and cold with a high in the 30s.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Wednesday, March 17th. An investigation underway after a shooting rampage in the Atlanta area left 8 people dead. The shooting's taking place in a span of 1 hour and at 3 separate massage parlors.
Not really making any sense how this happens at the massage spa.
6 of the 8 victims were Asians. Jay Baker is the police captain in Cherokee County, Georgia.
Well, nothing's going to be ruled out. We're conducting a multiple homicide investigation. So wherever the evidence leads us, that's where the investigators will go.
Police arresting the suspect, 21-year-old Robert Aaron Long, 150 miles south of Atlanta last night. Authorities say Long may have been headed to Florida to carry out even more attacks. President Biden says he supports changing the rules of the Senate to allow for passage of legislation on a simple majority vote. Here's Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton.
That's ultimately what the Democrats want. It's their far left that's angry that they don't have popular support for their agenda, so they're trying to change the rules and ram it through in this fleeting window when they have power before we win back the Senate and the House next year.
Cotton thinks President Biden is getting pushed around by the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says changing the rules of the filibuster will lead to a scorched earth mentality in the U.S. Senate. The Dallas Convention Center could soon house the influx of migrant kids who are crossing the southern border. President Biden spoke about the crisis last night on ABC News.
Can you repeat what Trump did? Take them from their mothers, move them away, hold them in cells, etc.? We're not doing that. So what we're doing is provide for enough safe facilities.
Texas Congressman Dan Crenshaw says while Border Patrol is busy trying to house the thousands of unaccompanied minors who are crossing the border, bad guys are getting in.
Border Patrol, instead of patrolling the border, well, they become babysitters, they become bus drivers, they become nurses. And you know what they're not doing? They're not looking for those people on a terrorist watch list. They're going in between, right? There's a distraction over here, and the bad guys who don't want to get caught come through over here.
A Border Patrol says 4 people on the U.S. terror watch list were recently apprehended while trying to cross the southern border. President Biden says New York Governor Andrew Cuomo should step down if sexual harassment allegations against the disgraced Democrat are proved to be true.
That's what I think happens. And by the way, it may very well be there could be a criminal prosecution that is attached to it.
The president says the governor's 7 female accusers deserve to be heard.
A woman should be presumed to telling the truth and should not be scapegoated and become victimized by her coming forward. But there should be an investigation to determine whether what she says is true.
New York Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis.
The governor has become a distraction. Look, the fact that the president of the United States is even talking about him, and 90% of the New York delegation in Washington have called for his resignation, shows what a distraction he has become.
Malliotakis says the governor has lost all credibility, and the number of accusers underscores that point.
We're now on the 7th woman that has come forward. You can question a motive of let's say, the first woman or the second woman, but once there's 7 women, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that something wrong has occurred.
Governor Cuomo also under investigation for allegedly covering up New York State's COVID-19 nursing home deaths. The New York State Legislature moving forward with an impeachment inquiry that will cover both the sexual harassment allegations and the nursing home scandal. Former President Trump telling Americans to get the COVID-19 vaccine.
I would recommend it to a lot of people that don't want to get it, and a lot of those people voted for me, frankly, but it's a great vaccine. It's a safe vaccine.
A recent poll shows 42% of Republicans say they weren't going to get the COVID vaccine. That's compared to 17% of Democrats who said they weren't going to get the shot. Columbia University hosting segregated graduation ceremonies this spring. It's to accommodate the LGBTQ lifestyle.
All the calls for unity that we've heard over the last few months from prominent Democrats and liberal elites have clearly been false. I mean, what they're trying to do here is to balkanize people along ethnic, gender, racial, and all sorts of other lines.
Sarab Sharma, a conservative columnist at the Ivy League school.
And you know what's really troubling to me about this is that this isn't some obscure school. This is Columbia University, a school that regularly pumps out congressmen, senators, U.S. presidents, and even Supreme Court justices. The idea that the future leaders of this country are being mired in this kind of ethnic bigotry on a regular basis is really troubling.
Columbia is holding six separate ceremonies based on everything from student income levels to race, ethnicity, and gender identity. 25 minutes past the hour, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Christopher Anderson. And Chris, today we're talking about the family structure and what we're seeing today in society.
Yeah, Brandon, we are. And this is such an important topic. The social currents that we're seeing in society today are definitely moving us in a direction, as we all know, that is against the definition of what God lays out as his design for the family in his word, the Bible. So with that in mind, we want to make sure that the truth and the basis for our discussion today will be based on what we see in the Bible for being the family structure.
Christians might be wondering how we go about clarifying what you mean by God's definition.
Sure. We're talking about the nuclear family with the father, mother, and the children. But it's very important right now that right off the bat, we really clarify that our discussion is not meant in any way to cast aspersion on single-parent households. But with the increasing assault on the nuclear family definition, and especially the assault on God's design for families, that's what we need to address today.
So let's start with those trends that you mentioned that we're seeing in society.
We're seeing a redefining of what a family could and should look like based on society norms, and that's including same-gender unions, where children are adopted by two mothers or two fathers. And the basis for this argument is that it's someone's civil right to be able to be a parent, regardless of what people report to be their sexual orientation. So the reality is that this is not a civil rights issue if we are really going to be talking about the biblical design for parenthood and familyhood. It should not even be considered a civil right by anyone that considers themselves heterosexual, but rather a divine calling by God. So marriage and parenthood shouldn't be something that you claim and pursue just because you want it. If that were the case, then those who may not marry will always feel that they've been denied their own rights. Okay, that's just not the case. We know that God uses singles in mighty ways. I was single for years myself, not being married until I was in my 40s. But we're seeing the political movement of today that wants to tack onto the Civil Rights Act gender identity and expression. And this is to include marriage, adoption of children, and other benefits. So this movement has risen in response in large part to the persecution that these people have experienced for generations. And unfortunately, often at the hands of interactions with Christians. So of course, I'm in no way attempting to justify the mistreatment of anyone, regardless of their beliefs about themselves or what they believe they're entitled to. And Christians should really take the lead in loving people, but this doesn't include necessarily supporting or celebrating lifestyles that go against what God says is his design. So we're simply focusing on what God's design is for the family, and in an ideal situation, of course, it's a mother, father, and the children in the context of a marriage. So sociologists who hold on to the biblical and traditional definition of families and marriages report that the greatest challenges facing our families today, particularly in inner city locations, is that breakdown of the family structure and, of course, the absence of godly fathers in the household.
What advice do you have for people who just aren't sure how to navigate these waters?
One thing to keep in mind, and we all know this, is that there's this militancy today in the movement that we're seeing. You know, anyone that wants to hold the biblical view of marriage and the family unit and wants to speak up will likely encounter at least some level of resistance. And we're seeing this a lot, actually. But the church does need to take a stand, and Christians who believe the Bible to actually be the Word of God will need to be willing to speak out in a loving way. But working with your church leadership to understand where your church stands on the issue is an important first step. Secondly, have trusted friends, and this is that all-important support network that we've talked about many times. You need to have friends in that network that share your faith and also that share your beliefs so that you can communicate with them, asking them for support and prayer if and when you encounter challenges by others that don't share your beliefs. Don't walk this road alone, seriously. Make sure you speak the truth in love, especially when someone who believes the societal trends tries to get you to feel bad for holding a biblical view. So it's not, of course, a comfortable situation to be in. And thirdly, check for resources online that will help inform you of the trends, but also what you can do to support the efforts of organizations dedicated to God's design of the family. So, for example, Focus on the Family, the Family Research Council are two sources, among others, that will have resources for you. And then lastly, this one is really important, especially if you have small children, or really, I should say, even teens in schools. Make sure you're aware of what curriculums are being used to teach about topics such as sexuality and gender. There's a big, big push these days to get sexuality and gender taught in the earliest years of grade school. So as a parent, you have the right to know, and you are your child's main authority on these topics, not the school. So keep a close eye on what they're being taught, and you, as a parent, you take the lead on educating them on these topics.
You've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. It airs Wednesdays during the noon report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Christopher Anderson.
All right, guys, thanks for that. Let's stop by the Weather Center one more time. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. This St. Patrick's Day afternoon is a quiet one locally and regionally. Most of the action nationally will be in the deep south, where severe storms and tornadoes are occurring. Our weather will be impacted by that system to the extent we see rain tomorrow, rain that flips to snow later in the day and at night as cold air is drawn in out of Ontario. The call for this afternoon, where the overcast has not yet broken, it will. It'll turn out partly sunny, milder than yesterday, the high in the mid-40s to the mid-50s. Clouds return tonight, the low in the 30s. Cloudy and chilly tomorrow with rain arriving. It'll turn increasingly windy and colder. That rain flips to some sleet and snow from north to south later in the day into the night. Some accumulations, especially the high ground of the southern Finger Lakes and Twin Tiers. The high tomorrow in the 40s. Clearing on Friday, brisk and cold with a high in the 30s.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noon, yeah, a lot of green going on today. It is St. Patrick. Go ahead, fill your plate with some corned beef and cabbage. A lot of folks seeing green for another reason today, too. Those new stimulus checks started hitting bank accounts all across the country to the tune of $1,400 a pop, all part of the recently passed American Rescue Plan. St. Paddy's Day events this year, kind of low-key for the second year in a row because of the pandemic. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. That's the world we live in this Wednesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.